John F. Kennedy Library President's Office Files. Presidential Recordings Collection. Tape number 69. Reel 3. 3 minutes, 56 seconds of this tape have been excised for reasons of national security. The 9 excisions have been indicated. For additional information, please see recording log number 69.
Maybe to some. Good day, there, Lord. The second reading was your best.
Increase hourly labor costs by as much as 14%. Start a new wage price spiral of inflation. And undercut our efforts to compete with other nations. To achieve these greater gains, one step above all is essential. The enactment this year of a substantial reduction and revision in federal income taxes. For it is increasingly clear to those in government, business, and labor who are responsible for our economy's success that our obsolete tax system exerts too heavy a drag on private purchasing power, profit, and employment.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you.
Yes, sir, thank you.
Actually, I think that, some second that Judge Bill Marsh out is good. I would like to go to the end and get off that kind of impact.
War we've ever had, I recall this was true at least in World War II,
We had some units that distinguished themselves by showing a considerable lack of aggressiveness. On the other hand, this is one of the things we're going to look at when we go out there.
I saw one of the question of whether our tour of duty of our people is long enough. We ought to ask you to stay for more than a year.
Pretty rough.
But it'd be interesting to know when they begin to be effective, how long after their arrival. You figure their transportation takes about a month. Do they go by ship, most of them?
They mostly go by air.
So how much do you get, what, 11 good months out of there?
I would say you get a good 11 months out of them. However, this is one of the things I can talk to General Harkins and the other commanders about and see what they feel about this. The overall mission that's given the team by the Chiefs is rather broad to assess the progress of U.S. counterinsurgency program in South Vietnam, to form a military judgment regarding prospects for timely and successful conclusion. And of course, the word timely in there has got to be a little elastic. To make recommendations to the JCS and the Secretary of Defense regarding actions necessary. Now, in doing this, we propose to review plans and programs, command and control arrangements, relationships between American and indigenous authorities, employment of aviation, military intelligence and special operations, contingency planning, force readiness, and resource adequacy. In particular, we will ask General Harkins to lay out for us his overall Operation Explosion, which is planned to start, in fact, I think is now going on in its early stages right now. The way we're going to do this, we'll leave here tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, fly into Hawaii, spend a half day with the SyncPAC staff. Admiral Felt, of course, is not there, but we would like to talk to his staff and component commanders. And we'll get into Saigon in the morning of the 18th. Their time. We're going to spend one day in the city of Saigon talking to the ambassador, the country team, and military officials, and then we're going to take the field for 5 days and make a series of trips to American and U.S. and Vietnamese units. The last 2 days in Vietnam, I hope to be able to talk to President Diem and talk more to General Harkins and the country team. Coming home, we will spend one day in Okinawa, where we can have a chance to take a look at the U.S. support for Southeast Asia, which is mounted from Okinawa. This is a supply base. Then a day with Admiral Felt in Hawaii, and if all goes according to plan, why, we will come home on the arrive home late on the evening of the 27th. Now, you might be interested in... Incidentally, this is a plastic map that we are making and issuing out there so that it can be rained on and dropped in the water and it doesn't disintegrate. This shows the places we'll visit, sir. It's both in the highlands up here and also down in the Delta area. And the idea is to get the maximum amount of time to talk to people who are really engaged in operations, including the strategic handling business.
It takes 5 days to stretch.
Yes, sir. So actually, we'll come in and out of Saigon on a couple of occasions. But the object of the exercise is to try to concentrate our activities in any given area at any given time.
They can get as much away from these sort of formal briefings, which I think they do.
Well, I've asked them not to do this. As a matter of fact,
you just talk to these fellows privately, it's not do much for it.
For example, the strategic hamlet we were supposed to go to, they tell me is one that's never been visited before. So, I don't know whether we can get there or whether it'll be there when we get there. This is the object of the exercise.
He understands that we want to see some different, you know, not the usual.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
You've got good people gone. But, now, we've got representatives and senior representatives of Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps, and the Joint Staff going along. A total of about 12 officers with diverse backgrounds and capabilities, so we'll be able to take a pretty broad overall look at the situation.
Okay. You go this, would you say Thursday, Friday?
Tomorrow morning.
Oh, tomorrow.
We're not filling this publicly as something as important as I really think it is. It's simply a routine visit by General Lucas.
You won't be seeing the press out there, will you?
I don't think I can escape it, Mr. President. I imagine when I come in there that the first thing they'll want to know is why I'm there. And I propose to say that this is a normal visit of the of representatives of the JCS, and it also gives me my first chance to take a look at operations there since becoming chief of staff in the Army.
Good. If you had a good man going with you, could talk to these fellows to see how much of what they say is chronic press complaints about.
When I went out, I took two press people from Washington here. I think they're pretty crowded.
It might be well, General Wheeler, to talk to the press privately out there. I have
just to hear their story, to see what they have to say. I could ask questions before you leave, and after I left, to get there after you've been there a while. Or you'd be cutting before you began your trip and just interview.
Now, apropos of this,
they're the ones who are making the sort of pressing the view of the situation to the American people. They might have some ideas.
Admiral Felt came in with a report here the other day in which he indicated that he felt that perhaps the PIO representation out there had not been strong enough. And he is planning to do something that I understand has selected, as a matter of fact, a very able PIO to go out there and take over. There have been other proposals about perhaps having some very high-level types go out from the Washington area, and perhaps this would damp the reports that are coming from the rather lightweight types that they have on station out there.
Well, they had Homer Biggert there at the time, and he couldn't be worse. They all get this thing.
They still haven't improved very much.
They haven't improved.
I do think the best press we've had have been from people sent from Washington on a special mission. They have no
Ken
sense
Crawford.
To get
Ken
Crawford. Yeah, you did a good job.
Okay, see. Right. Good time. I didn't think out. They stay here a while. They all get there.
They get the local items, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
I would like to take a photography demo.
Yes, the chiefs have wanted to just mention to you their feeling that we've let the low-level photography go for a long time in Cuba, and that while we've had quite, generally speaking, quite successful flights with the high level, there are still very interesting, important points which we've been losing touch with, particularly the heavy ground equipment, whether or not they have indeed taken out the nuclear-capable frogs, which some of the transporters which we've seen going out. And lately, the question of this ship, which is coming in, you've led to Dr. Marr here in Havana or in Mariel. And I think they might just like to express to you the feeling that we think, in first, as a matter of principle, secondly, as a matter of actual advantage, that we should be quite ready to fly whenever we have something that's unusual in it. Any chief want to amplify on this?
I would say this, that I just talked to my people just before I left the office. With this ship that's coming in, if these fellows are doing what they did in past practice, it's quite possible that they would unload anything that's sensitive at night.
Yes.
And therefore, we'd have to do a night photo flash photography, really, to get the dope, which we have never done over there.
No, they can defeat us by, if they really want to.
That's right.
This is all the more reason for covering some of those installations out again to see what shows up out there.
It's rather difficult, complicated. It isn't complicated. It's important, though, to have a night flash if you're going to do it over Havana. That's a.
It makes it harder if it's a good
idea. We've got to get some clues as to whether it's actually important. I think the low level of the daytime over Havana is also complicated. I don't know what the prospects are. I don't think there's much prospect of being shot down because we haven't done it for 2 months, so they couldn't possibly be expecting it.
The low level, I don't think much chance. Down. Of course, they can shoot down to U2 whenever they decide they want to do it.
Yeah.
And from that standpoint, I just assumed file a flight plan with the Air Center in Havana on the go. I don't think they're going to do anything.
Well, I think Mr. McCullen has some recommendation.
That's right.
Whether it's good, I'll be charged with Secretary of State and Defense Legislative will be back to
it. Yes, sir. Of course, the play of the area in which I have the most direct interest is in the matter of the ground equipment, Mr. President, and high-level photography is not going to give you a lead on whether or not those frog missiles are being taken out, brought in, whether they're being given more missiles to go with the launchers and so on. And we figure that there's still the equivalent of about five or four small Soviet regiments in there tailored for this specific job that they were sent in there for.
We had some, based on even the last conversation, and so I think they're maybe going to take those out, or they may not, but that they don't take them out, it's going to be a reversal of what he said he's going to do. That is an argument for not pushing our low-level photography to a point where it looks as if we are in any way considering a military action, because there's no sense. The quicker they get them out, the better off we are.
I agree on that, sir. However, you know that they were putting in these permanent barracks and so on, and apparently this has been going on in two locations. And so I just don't know what this indicates.
Well, in any case, we can settle that. The other one was this Phillips article. I wrote a letter. This was his protest, his article, analyzing our command set up in Cuba. I sent a memorandum over. He sent back a, you don't have a copy of the one they sent back?
Well,
this was more or less indicating Phillips was wrong. I don't know enough about it, but was there any...
What he's done, Mr. President, he's talked to some of the officers in the Think Strike Command, who feel that this kind of operation should have been given to Think Strike rather than to Think Light. When you get all, when you go all through that route,
that would be what?
That is General Adams' command, with the headquarters at MacDill.
Yeah.
Now that command is really not a unified command in the same sense that Think Light or Syncure. Although it is so entitled, it's really a command of Army and Air Force that the primary purpose is to provide a general reserve of combat-ready forces to reinforce other unified commands. In other words, they verify the training of the Army and Air Force units and package them up and move them rapidly out as reinforcements generally to other unified commanders. As you know, SyncPAC, for example, or Syncure, any unified commander, have literally dozens of contingency plans calling for reinforcements of various combinations and packages. So the primary purpose of a Think Strike is to produce those forces out of the General Reserve in the United States. Now, it's true, we can use him flexibly if we wanted to. If he wanted to send an expedition into Africa, we could actually charge him with performing it. But that has never been done. It could be, however. I would say that our conduct at the organization of command in Cuba was strictly the normal setups. Think Land has been charged with this planning for years. So he has a staff that, with all the background, out planning against for the invasion of Cuba. So there was absolutely no reason I could see to change that setup and shift it over to Think Strike, although it could have been done that way.
Irregardless of the merits of where Think Land or Think Strike should have done it, Think Strike was just formed, and we were into the Cuba flap too late to switch it over. Time they were ready to go, we were right in the midst of the Cuba business, and it certainly didn't make any sense to change that.
Well, this AFLAN is
Air Force Land.
Air Force Commander.
Air Force Component.
That's General Sweeney, isn't it?
General Sweeney, yes.
All right, then as I understand, Admiral Dennison was the Atlantic Command contains Joint Task Force 4. Contingency plans for ground operations in the Atlantic, such as Cuba. General Truman commands Joint Task Force. He is only a planning staff. But Joint Task Force 4, Phillips says, is not a clear preliminary operation for the invasion of Cuba. Although preparations for invasion included Navy forces, Marine, ground, and air forces, Army forces, and air forces, there was no unification or unified command organization in existence.
Now, this is the chart that shows at the implementation stage. So here is Dennison under Joint Chiefs of Staff. He also has another hat. He is the naval component of his own command. Then here was General Howells over here, who is the Army component, and here was Sweeney over here, the Air Force component. Now, when they went ashore, the actual forces that went ashore was this Admiral Rivero's task force. Put General Howells' people ashore, and General Preston under General Sweeney was giving them the air support over there. Once they had got ashore, then General Howells would take command of the entire act.
I would say that the cooperation, the command arrangements, the working together of Admiral Dennison, General Powell, who was the headquarters, Admiral Dennison in Norfolk, Sweeney at Langley Field, and Powell at Fort Monroe. And they...
And they had an advanced headquarters down at Homestead, and all the chiefs at one time or other visited the units around.
Oh, really? This is really...
Army, Navy, and Air Force. And I never heard any criticism of what was going on with the cooperation or anything else. Everything was fine.
Well, the president visited the headquarters at Homestead.
He says Howe is designated as the Joint Task Force Commander, and this was assigned as Corps Commander of the Army Landing. He would not, however, have had the authority until he landed.
He commanded by Army component.
And then only over the Army. The Marines would have operated separately. That's not correct.
Actually, the initial landings, the Marines were all the way over to Guantanamo, but as soon as they made contact, then Howe took command of everything ashore.
Yeah, well, there was a Marine landing on the
west side of the And once they were firmly ashore, well, they would have come under General Howe's command also.
Right.
Incidentally, Mr. President, we've asked Admiral Dennison several weeks ago to review the entire plan now, and that's due to the Joint Chiefs in the next day or two. So we will go over the whole thing and verify once more after this experience that indeed we want to stay with our with the setup that we did.
The other thing is this question of the
Nassau
Pact and where do we.
Yes, we were rather responding to some of the things when we fought the war. The Rostov paper rather got ahead of events, and to a certain extent seemed to us to try to reverse some of the decisions. I haven't had a chance to talk directly to Walt. I intend to. If you're interested in seeing our last comment on what we're working on, we're primarily concerned now with the initial, setting up this initial course, how to do it with maximal political effect at the same time on sound military lines.
We're going to have Ben Fanning come tomorrow. As I, you know, of course, General Gall doesn't agree with any of this. He wants to get on the force, which he's entitled to have. But the whole reason we're concerned in doing all this exercise is really three reasons. First, we had this traditional position with the British, which had to be continued one way or another. Secondly, we are concerned that if we don't do something with these European countries, they all go the direction of France. They all begin to develop. Feel they have to develop the national deterrent, which will take their resources from conventional forces. And thirdly, that the Germans will present a problem to us all if they begin to, because of, I think, the strong Soviet feeling, the strong feeling in Eastern Europe, the strong feeling, in fact, in Western Europe, if the Germans begin to have a national nuclear capacity. So that in order to satisfy and prevent all these things from going ahead, now there's many problems connected with it. Because actually, the present range is the best from our point of view, and really the best from Europe's point of view. But I don't need to point out that probably there are, you know, the Gaul doesn't agree, and he's helped sow the seeds in all of them. This is the test of being a national power if you ever own a nuclear weapon. So that even though you think the experience of Britain, which isn't a very big national power now, would show them that this is not the intention of Britain, but they think so. So we have to come up with some proposals, or otherwise, have the Germans and the Italians do it themselves.
Well, we think this initial force is quite important because it can be put together with the things we have presently, and it also be a sort of pilot model for any follow-on contributions which this thing broadens out. So we have made a proposal which to us seems to combine the military soundness capability plus the political aspect of it.
Well, now, if we're going to have a multilateral force, Belgians or Italians and Germans serving on Polaris, at what point would the security problem for us, this is aside from our, of course, we continue to control the warhead, but having the, you think that we could, I suppose we bring a lot of foreigners into a lot of sensitive things today.
Well, first of all, we bring them into a lot of sensitive things, and we get, I'm sure if we try to do this with the ships that we have in commission coming down the waves, we really get a rise from the Joint Committee, who are very conscious of this, and you know Admiral Rick over there too. There are difficulties in creating a mixed Polaris force, a mixed manned force. There's no question about it. But I would not say it's impossible. It's going to be a real tough job to select a long-time training problem. Certainly the commanding officers have got to be very carefully selected.
and you're going to have to feel your way along on this thing. So if they want to finance the construction of one of these ships, I would say then that we would bring these crews in for training about a year before the ship, maybe a year and a half before the ship would be ready.
How long does it take to build the ship?
It takes us a minimum of 44 months, and that's with the highest possible priority. I think we should figure pretty close to 60 months. We might be able to beat that, somewhere between 40
and 50. We're not in a hurry anyway.
That's right. We're not in a hurry.
So it could go, in other words, the ship, by the time it gets out, be 68 or 9.
That's right.
Now, by then, the kind of submarine we're talking about, at least the Polaris, how far ahead are we of the Russians, do we think?
Well, we're a long ways ahead of them right now.
Excision 1. 55 seconds excised.
We've got a total of 28. We've got a lot more building. There's no doubt that given 5 years, they'll improve greatly. They'll lick the problems they've got. I think we still have a good lead on them. Now, in the meantime, we're improving our missiles that we're putting in. We're testing the A3 missile right now. It isn't out of the woods yet, but there's no problems that we won't lick. We've had the same problems before. So I think we'll be sure to keep ahead of them. But we certainly don't want to let some of our secrets get out unnecessarily or prematurely. That's the reason that we have advocated, Mr. Kilpatrick, I believe you bought the idea, that if the French wanted to buy a submarine, we'd build it for them, and that would put it off about 5 years before they got any knowledge of training the crew a year ahead. So that would postpone and give us a further security.
What about our making it, let's say, it really is a duplicate for everything we're doing, but if they buy the things here, it helps out, it doesn't hurt us. What about having it...
You mean buying the reactive
wheel? No, let's say they're going to buy whatever kind of ship they may use in this force over here.
Well,
what about their buying it? What about our having this on the surface? Does that present
a set the ship? Well, Mr. McNamara is probably going to talk about this. He doesn't think this is as good a weapon system as a submarine. We certainly agree. The best thing is a SSBN. But if you want a mixed man, it's easier to mix man a surface ship, and it costs less with Polaris than a submarine. We could do it faster. We're giving him, I just sent down to him this afternoon, a preliminary review, and he'll probably be talking to you about this thing. Now, we've always taken the position, this is the NATO force should be a mixed force, land and sea. I think that there may be some appeal on this surface force if they want to get into it, in which case, then, we could sell them the missiles. The cost roughly runs something like this, about $6.5 million per missile in a surface ship, and in a Polaris submarine, I think it runs run up around $25 million a missile if you get all the added overhead. So this is something that we could do if they
don't talk about firing missiles from the ship which is moving.
No, there's no problem with them. No, we can handle that all right. We do it. We've done that from the observation island, for example.
You know, Mr. President, the Italians are likely to raise this when funding comes with regard to the Garibaldi, for which we understand they want to get missiles.
That's right.
A cruiser?
Now, Secretary McNamara does not favor this.
I don't think we want to go that fast anyway, do we, with them? I don't see the
Excision 2. 15 seconds excised.
I think that you should make it very apparent to the Italians that they're getting into a very expensive type of operation if they try to go into something of this sort. And they can certainly spend their money in other areas and get a bigger return for the good of the common good of the alliance. I don't think they should get into this thing with limited means. If we want them to contribute to a mixed man
problem, Mr. President.
Excision 3. 5 seconds excised.
Over the weekend, I've received three cables from General Lemnitz. They're trying to get ammunition and argumentation to back him up. We're trying to produce the best paper we can, but we really need something now to help us over this hurdle. I'm not sure whether the Garibaldi might be a possibility or not.
Well, I agree. It always seemed to me from reading the Joint Committee's reports and everything else that they weren't much use to Jupiter. It's like everything else, they're no use to you.
Well, the facts are, all military people know there are abuse, that this is a net reduction. Our problem is this, to explain why withdraw this missile firepower when we're not able to reconstitute a similar force.
And we can't say we're reducing Polaris into the Mediterranean.
But, of course, those same two.
Excision 4. 3 seconds excised.
No, but I think the political factors of introducing Polaris into the Mediterranean is not comparable, but slightly similar to why we were so sensitive about the introduction of missiles. If we had them down the Gulf of Mexico permanently, 4 or 5 Russian submarines, we think that's different from the fact they had some missiles over the Soviet Union might hit the same target. I think that there is a political
intent.
It looks like a new step. It is a new step.
We talked to two different audiences, at least two in Europe. One is the political group, and then the military people. The military people know just about as much as we do about the target, the effectiveness in terms of firepower. And that's the audience that the general industry has to talk to.
I know, but I think the only thing that really seemed to me important was the fact that we're going to put these missiles into these Polaris submarines into the Mediterranean. And I think that is a change. And I think so many of these things are, they look. What really bothered us about Cuba was some military importance, but also was greatly more political importance. Appearance it gave of a movement by the Soviets against us. I think that we're going to have a lot of flack about the Polaris going into the submarine into and if you go into the Eastern Mediterranean. I think it's bound to be. Now, we should take that. It seems to be the Cubanism. I think that helps balance off that we're moving into a newer weapon system, and therefore we're moving to Jupiter. In my view, I understand they may be interested in using the Jupiter for space work or something. That seems to me all right. I think we have a better explanation for our actions if it looks like this is the 1963-4-5 decision.
Well, we're handicapped in using the argument.
Doug Dillon told me they put these Jupiters over there just because, you know, it's sort of a period where
all military people are just going to add up.
Excision 5. 1 minute, 19 seconds excised.
We have taken it as a matter of national policy that we're going to put these things in, and we're working towards the date of the 1st of April, which we will meet with some difficulty. It would be better for us if we had a little bit more time, but we're taking the date of the 1st of April as the gospel.
Well, Ranger, just to say, we do have a problem of aligning our best argumentation here about our case.
How many do you expect to have in there by 1964?
Excision 6. 1 minute, 8 seconds excised.
You don't have much feeling about this question of national programs, whether these are people. Does the Chief have any view on this question of the desirability or the lack of desirability from our point of national nuclear forces?
Of course, we have national nuclear forces now, and as you said at the outset, we think from a military point of view, the present arrangement is the best.
Yes.
Now, all these concessions we're talking about really are for not for military reasons, rather.
Right.
Our purpose is not to lose militarily while meeting the political requirements.
Right. Even though I don't think you can make any argument that it's going to add very much to us.
That's the trouble, man. You've made the point several times that really we're going through all this exercise.
No, if I make it
to appease the Germans. And my question really is, when we get to you, have we done it unless we're willing to make some concessions in the political control of the decisions you think about?
Well, I agree. I think that, you know, we're opening a box. I don't know where it's, whether you can ever, whether they'll want more and more until they get the national. We don't want the Germans to have it. But with De Gaulle presenting us as many problems he does and encouraging really others, I mean, Fat Fanny's going to come over here and it's going to be more bilateral arrangement. I think we just go along and final analysis what protects us is the fact it's so expensive. You really have got the money.
I think that would honor the final answer.
What do you think of the French force, General? You know, we got a very good analysis of their chance of getting in.
I think that they're, you mean, will their airplane penetrate?
Yeah.
All right. I think they can get in, yes.
The, even without the, by the time it's ready, which is like 65 or so, the anti-
I don't think there's any doubt about being able to penetrate.
Through the 60s?
Yeah, it all depends on what size force they get going. Because tactics and penetration aid is what gets you through. And they're perfectly capable of using good tactics and good penetration aids.
Well, we don't know of any penetration aids they have now.
I'm sure that they're fully aware of the need for...
Excision 7. 1 second excised.
And things of that sort. Probably use some low altitude tactics. There's no doubt in my mind that they can penetrate on it.
After all, you trained them in fighter bomber type nuclear operations where you capitalize on a little
low altitude
attack.
They're first class type of tactics. There's no doubt about what they're being able to penetrate. In other words, I don't think they're building an obsolete force.
This is, I hear views frequently as they are, but that's not the, our view. That's not your view.
Well, we hear some people here say that bombers can't penetrate anymore, and I've been hearing that for 30 years.
I think you'd get some disagreement in this group on this, Mr. President.
Yeah.
You got a lot of people sitting out there in airplanes that think they're going to get in.
Well, yeah, but I mean, God, we're talking about putting in a...
Excision 8. 6 seconds excised.
Well, I'll admit numbers add to your overall capability.
Well, I'm sure that in the long term, the French are also talking about a missile force. And, in other words, I heard, as a matter of fact, certain of the French planner types who supposedly are close to General de Gaulle in this area.
Excision 9. 4 seconds excised.
And he was talking in terms of a small missile force, and specifically targeting Moscow.
Well, I don't think the French are trying to build a nuclear force to defeat Russia by themselves. I just can't visualize them thinking anything along those lines. What they want is a missile force of their own that they can create a big fuss about if they did use it, and thereby get into the overall act. I can't see them having the resources to build a big enough force to go off on their own. So anything they plan in the way of tactics and overall strategy for their use has to be tied in with the rest of the NATO forces.
Well, I think they think also, even if they have 50 planes, of which only 5 to get through, but that's sufficient to deter them. They could hit 2 or 3 large cities.
At least they can't be ignored, okay.
This is right, Mr. President. They talk in those terms that they have a deterrent value, even if they only have one missile or one bomb on a Soviet city.
Well, it is a deterrent. I think it's because we are carrying a major load. The other thing we got to think about is they're not going to put anything into conventional forces. No one's going to build up these forces when they're really. So we talked about Florida. Yeah, we're just wasting our time. I read about the Germans and others saying that all we want is European cannon fodder and so on. Look at the size of our conventional forces, in addition to our balance of payments problem with the French. I think they may get
this point about the French. The Minister of Defense, Messmer, told me in September before I came home when I went to call on him that he was going before the French Chamber of Deputies in the next couple of days with the largest military budget in French peacetime history. And he told me that, of course, within this was a part of the nuclear force, but that a considerable amount, a very large amount, was being spent to re-equip the French Army. And the reason being that their equipment in the course of the Algerian War had been very badly deteriorated. In fact, most of it was junk. And I asked him if he anticipated getting this money, and he said yes. He said he thought there'd be quite a squabble about it, but that they would get it, because General de Gaulle had said they would.
Did you see Hanson Bold's article about what their plan was as far as the build-up of their forces about a week ago?
I didn't see that. Somebody mentioned it. Somebody mentioned it.
Good, fine. Well, that's appreciate the talk to you. We'll have some the secretary.
I see the credit. Incidentally, Admiral Mountbatten is coming over the 5th and 6th of February with a few of his officers to talk to the Joint Chiefs. This will be the first military-to-military contact we've had with British.
Bring it by.
Yeah.